Well, hello. Welcome, everybody, to a very special kind of mellow version. Let's call it the bonus version of the Living in Las Vegas podcast here on the Vegas Video Network. And I will say this, as always, I want to congratulate you for watching or listening to the longest running podcast about Vegas that actually originates in Vegas. Okay, so you may be asking yourself, all right, Scott, why are we doing the mellow thing? For those of you who've been watching the show for 10 years or so, you're like, this is not how Scott normally starts this show. And if you're a first-time viewer or a first-time listener, you're like, wow, this sounds very NPR-ish. Great. I guess I'll dial in and make a donation. So here's the scoop. Here's what's actually going on here. So last week, we did a show about what it takes to be a professional entertainer in Las Vegas. And our guest was a gentleman named Chris Phillips, who goes by Zoe Bowie here. And for those of you who have watched our show, you know, our average show here, time-wise, is usually an hour and 15, hour and a half, plus or minus. And so the show with Chris, which arguably was epic, it wasn't an hour, it wasn't 2 hours, it wasn't even 3 hours, it was over 3.5 hours. Now, while I appreciate the value of 3.5 hours of broadcasting, the truth is it wasn't reasonable for me to think that someone would want to download 3.5 hours of interview content just from a file size, whether it was audio or a podcast video or watch a 3.5 hour YouTube video. So what we decided to do, I kind of thought this might happen before we did the show, was we did part one and part two. So part one was episode 275. That's what we launched late last Wednesday, if you were paying attention. And that was the first half-ish of the show. And then part two, which will be episode 276, we're going to launch that today. As soon as we finish up doing this bonus episode. So you may be asking, why are we doing a bonus episode? Fair enough. Because look, Scott, you put in the work. You should have got a hazard's pay for doing that 3.5 hour show with Chris. And I felt like I probably should have a hazard's pay. I didn't get to bed until 5 in the morning that night. Didn't get up until, I don't even want to talk about what time I got up, but it was brutal. But here's the deal. Part of what makes this show so fun for me, and I think one of the great things about online broadcasting and specifically live broadcasting, is the fact that I knew that we would have live people. Every Tuesday night, we broadcast live. What time? 7 o'clock at VegasVideoNetwork.com /live. And just like I had hoped for, again, the live chat is showing up in a big way. And we're getting scrolling words and words of encouragement and some joking as well. We had people here actually an hour and a half before the show started tonight, probably trying to watch the last part of the show from last week. We've got people from Las Vegas and Henderson, Rochester, Minnesota, Illinois. I got Mesa, Arizona, Peoria, Arizona, Palo Alto, California, Simi Valley, California, Florida, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Austin, Texas, Maryland, Portland, Oregon, New York, Ontario, Canada, Utah. All these folks are here watching. So I didn't want to let them down. So what we're going to do is we're going to shoot this, and Texas, don't forget Texas. We're going to shoot this bonus show primarily as a thank you to the people who are in the live chat, Prescott, Arizona in the house as well. And we're going to distribute this as well. So we are recording the show and we'll do this as a bonus episode. So we'll put this out sometime between today and next Tuesday. Not sure when, maybe Thursday or Friday. Just a little extra content for you guys. And appreciating for playing along. But what we're going to do today is kind of be more inward focused. We're going to get ourselves an opportunity to kind of catch up a little bit So we're going to focus our attention on emails that we've received and some live chat questions, especially the email we've kind of fallen behind a little bit on. So let's start off with some email questions from our fans around the world here. And as a reminder, if you want to send a question to us, it's super easy to do. Just send it to onairq@livinginlv.com. Again, onairq@livinginlv.com. Okay, so let's get started with our questions. The first one is actually some research that Rosie did. By the way, an update on Rosie. As you know, she's the gal who sent me the email saying, you know, she moved out here because of us and we gave her courage and she wanted to work for Podworks and all that good stuff. And she is now an official intern for Vegas Video Network. She passed her background check. Flawless, not a mark against her, as I expected. Did I ever tell you that I did a background check on somebody else and found underage drinking? Like, well, they'd fit in. So Rosie is a part of, she's an intern right now, and she even has keys to the studio. So as a matter of fact, tomorrow will be the first time that she opens up the studio to take care of some business for me. So congratulations for Rosie on that. We'll see if she really knows what she's gotten herself into. I would suggest that she doesn't. But Rosie is a amazing researcher. And as you guys might recall, she, in the live chat, Gregor's like, she will be videotaped. As a matter of fact, she will be videotaped. Because I have video cameras in the studio for security reasons. So as a couple, might have been 3 or 4 weeks ago now, we got a question from somebody, might have been Lauren, who was going to be staying at an MGM property and wanted to know if she'd be able to use the fitness facilities at other properties. And we weren't very clear on that. We are now crystal clear on that. And here's what Rosie wrote. She said, I see now that there is no reciprocal access programs for fitness centers at MGM properties, which surprises me a little bit, given that they're doing the reciprocal thing for the parking, which we all appreciate. But the following properties have responded with their day pass program. So this is what it costs for a day pass for any of these properties. She also writes, once I get everybody, she'll make a cheat sheet, which reminds me, we did do a cheat sheet for all those restaurants. I think she came up with a list of 300 restaurants here in Vegas. We have a link to that on the episode that we spoke about all those restaurant things. I forget which episode it was, but it was basically Dining Around the World was the title, I think. So in the description of that podcast, you'll see a link to it's a Google spreadsheet that anybody can look at. And you can sort it and by, you know, restaurant name or by type or location. It's pretty cool. Rosie did a great job on that. Okay, so let's talk about what it costs to use the fitness centers at a variety of MGM properties. Aria, it's $55 a day per person. Vidara, $50 a day per person, but that also includes the spa and pool, which is nice. Mirage, $30 per person per day for the spa. MGM, $45 per person per day. Monte Carlo, $25 per person for Monday through Thursday. It's $35 Friday through Sunday, and that's it for now. So you can't just walk in with your other card and get in there, but you can pay to get in. And my guess is those prices, you know, I'm not sure if you have to be at any MGM property to get this or if anybody can pay that. That's a good question. I'll ask Rosie, and she'll give me 400,000 words on the response to that. Okay. Next up. Why do shows, live chat question, we'll get to why do shows, well, I'll explain that, it's a good question. Okay, stand by guys, I'm just grabbing a live chat question I think's worthy of answering. I think this is probably about absence. Okay, next question is from John Herman, who's from New York. John is a past Hatem winner. John writes, Scott, I think your argument about parking fees in Vegas that other cities charge higher parking fees is a false argument. If I park at Aria, for example, then most likely I am sending money there. Perhaps I won't gamble a large amount, but most likely I'll be eating or drinking. In New York City, for example, I will not be eating and drinking at that garage. Personally, I rarely rent a car in Vegas, and if I do, it's for a day to go to Red Rock or Valley of Fire. But it's a bullshit argument. Love the show. So he called me a bullshitter, but he still loves the show. So I wrote him back and asked for a little clarification. And I basically said, what part of the argument was false? Remind me what I said so I can just be sure I understand what happened. Because I believe you said that since other cities charge for parking, then it's similar to Vegas casinos, hotels charging for parking. But the difference is that when a person drives to New York City, for example, to see a show or have dinner, the parking garage does not profit from the dinner or show. But the casino profits directly. Perhaps I misunderstood. So you didn't misunderstand. I'm not referring to a straight parking garage. I'm referring to parking at a casino, or I'm sorry, at a hotel. So if I take what you're saying, you're basically, here's what I said, just to be clear. I said if you park at the Aria Casino, or actually let me back this up a little bit. Here's what happens. If I park at the Wyndham, whatever, I'm gonna pay $30 to park at Wyndham in Newport Beach, for example, for parking. Just for parking. And I actually will spend a lot of time in that property. I may eat at their restaurant, but you're right. I may go out a little bit. Why? And that may be the argument why they're charging so much. That's actually not the argument, but that could be an argument. Here's what happens for folks in Las Vegas. So let's say I'm staying at Aria and I park at Aria. The fact of the matter is, almost nobody stays at that one casino the whole time. And here's the exception. And I know two people who do this exception quite a bit. And those are people who are, you know, high rollers. Those are people who are, you know, Seven Diamond or Noir card members. And of course, if I stay at Aria, I'm going to gamble at Aria so I can, you know, keep gathering points. But the truth of the matter is that most people who come to Vegas don't stay in one casino. They roam at least one day. People get on their tenny runners and they're like, let's walk up and down the strip and kind of see our way. So, you know, overall, I think the whole paid for parking thing is actually bullshit on all levels. It just seems odd to me. Well, as a matter of fact, in our first the first studio we had for Vegas Video Network, it was paid for parking. And I basically said, that's not okay with me. We have to somehow compensate people so they don't end up paying for it. And it was a huge pain in the ass. And I thought it was ridiculous to charge somebody to park so that you can then do business with me. What the hell is that? So I think that if you charge $10 or $30 for parking, I think you're missing the point of taking care of your customers, A. And B, when it comes back again to the Las Vegas thing, I said this before, I think we're losing our cool. And I don't mean just hip cool, you know, Fonzie cool. I mean like they're panicking. And when you come to Vegas, you come here because it is an escape. It's really a pretty magical place if you want it to be that way. And part of the magic was being able to come here and not really have to think about the nickel and diming thing on every level. Yeah, I know there's resort fees and I get that, but the parking thing, it sounds like a little thing, but it really does kind of annoy me. But here's the truth. And I think MGM knew it and they bet on it. And my guess is that they bet right. And that is, you heard a lot of people, especially when this first happened, that they were saying, oh yeah, I'm going to boycott MGM properties. We're never going to go there again. Really? It'd be awesome to be able to see what the revenue change for other business for all these MGM properties happen beginning, you know, June. And my guess is it didn't drop off at all. And they increased the revenue because they're charging for parking. So as a result of that, there's little chance that the other guys out there are going to do this. So yeah, Pops wrote it, written, rinse and repeat. So I think Caesars will follow along. I think if there's anybody who doesn't follow along, it might be Wynn, but you know, they all want their dollar. They all want it. And if the guy across the street is getting 10 bucks a day for parking, 10 bucks times 5,000, that's a lot of money. So I'm guessing it's going to happen again. But you know, I really do believe it's a bummer. It really is kind of sad. Okay. Next, Timothy Jacques writes, hello, discovered your show on YouTube. It rocks. Well, thank you, Timothy. Question: how good is mass transit in Vegas? I'll be staying near the Strip, Tropicana Avenue, and will be attending an event at the Orleans, a curling tournament. Is there a bus route, and are they 24 hours? Well, this is interesting. So one of the greatest complaints about Vegas is that we have a really crappy public transit set up. And mostly that's a complaint about subways or being able to get, you know, down to the airport, for example. So people bitch about that stuff all the time. Yeah, mass transit, thanks. But the truth is the bus situation here seems to be pretty impressive. Now I'll be honest, I don't really deal with the RTC and I haven't been on a bus, but I see them everywhere. And I did a little bit of research to see, you know, do buses actually go up and down the Strip that are part of the RTC? Because you see, you know, the big red bus, the tour buses, but that's not part of the city or the county stuff. That's a tourist bus. And when I first got this question, I thought, you know, I don't know that RTC-based buses actually go up and down the Strip. I would think they probably wouldn't want to. And I was wrong. Actually, you've probably seen these buses. The Deuce and the SDX go up and down the Strip all the time. Over. I mean, it's a pretty significant coverage, and they stop everywhere. Yep. Mike in the live chat said, yeah, Deuce and SDX. So, you know, we've got some confirmation there. And then the connection from the Strip to, you know, the tributaries outside of that are, endless. The number of bus lines in Vegas are in the hundreds. So my guess is that you could easily hop over, you know, from Tropicana. And it didn't sound like you're right on Tropicana. You might have been a little bit up and down the Strip or off the Strip. But I think you'd have no problem going from there to, where was it? Where was it? Oh, wherever it was. Come on. Oh, yeah, Orleans. Yeah, you should have no problem. But the other thing is, you know, I don't know what your budget is, but you might also want to look at Lyft or Uber. I mean, that can't cost more than $5 to go from, let's say, corner of Tropicana and Las Vegas Boulevard to Orleans. $5, $6. You don't have to wait around. They come and get you. You know, again, it's a budgetary question, of course, but that's what I would do. By the way, it's pretty neat. Name that tune. Deuce is $6. Oh, look at this. Ted helping out. Let's see. So I'm getting some feedback from the live chat. Shannon's telling me SDX is way faster and runs downtown as well. It does go downtown. Deuce connects to Fremont also. Wow, these guys really know a lot about this. So Shannon says the thing about Deuce is they stop every 20 feet on the Strip. And that's what I saw when I looked at the map, is it stops everywhere. So it probably takes an hour to go up the Strip. Deuce is $6 for 2 hours, $8 for a 24-hour pass. Thank you, Ted, for that. Let's see. Deuce, Mandalay Bay to Mob Museum Loop, 24/7. Thanks, Pops. Look at that. Mike, $20 for 3 days, $60 for 30 days. Wow, some great information from the live chat. So yeah, clearly you can definitely pop around there, you know, with the Deuce or SDX, and have no problem. Crowds loading on the Strip can be bad and pushy, Pops is telling us with regards to the bus. Not bad for a non-local though. Okay, wow, this is great. All right, Gene, also known as Pops, asks, Dear Scott, when you go on location to do a live multi-camera broadcast, how much physical equipment is involved? And do you do the entire setup, shoot, and tear down by yourself? Or do you use roadies or extra security and the like? Ever had a problem with someone trying to steal your equipment while doing or going out doing a location shoot? I know the kinds of problems bands have in this area. I'm just wondering if the same shit happens with video shoes. Keep up the great work, Pops. Oh, a lot of questions here. Thanks, Pops. Let's see. So when I go on location to do a multi-camera shoot, what do we use physical-wise? Well, typically, What we got to do, video and sound is in essence the deal, right? So I'm going to bring out cameras. Typical a live remote will be a three camera shoot. It depends. We do some conferences where they're trying to keep the cost down that we might do a two camera shoot. So camera one would be the establishing shot showing the entire stage. Camera two might be a follow. I would do camera three typically for audience reaction, or if there's a panel, we might use the third camera to catch the panel while they're talking. So camera one would be the whole panel. Camera two would be the host or moderator. Camera three would follow whoever answers the question. So then you have to have a TriCaster. We own three TriCasters. The ones that we use at the main studio is an eight camera TriCaster, way more than what we need. We also have two what are called TriCaster 460s, which are four cameras. So the TriCaster I'm using here is a 460. It's a four camera. We have another one at the studio. So we would use one of those. The best example of what we can do is when we did FSC Live. So that was an unbelievably complex show, as that we were shooting live in the middle of Fremont Street in the middle of winter. So it was so cold sometimes that the cables actually got stiff while we were out there freezing our asses off. But that was the most complex remote thing we did, because besides the four cameras, we had confidence monitors, and confidence monitors are monitors so the talent can see what's being shot, so they know what's actually being streamed out and recorded. We had tally lights, which is a little red light on top of the camera so you know what camera is looking at you. We brought all that out there. You have to have a mixing board. We had to have a PA system so that the talent could hear the music and hear what was going on, bumpers and whatnot. I said mixing board, laptop, a switch for our internet access, laptop to be able to monitor all that. So all that is part of the equipment that we did. I built a portable television station in a box that we could wheel out, open it up, the cover turned into a desk. It was actually pretty slick. It wasn't cheap, but it was pretty slick. It depends on, normally I won't do it all by myself. I'll usually have at least one cameraman. It's not uncommon to have a single camera, the establishing shot be fixed, like these cameras here are, they don't move. But the follow camera, I have to have somebody. So we usually have a cameraman. I've got a guy who I work with all the time. Like, for example, one of the large gaming companies here, we're going to be doing a town hall meeting, a worldwide town hall meeting for them. It'll be two cameras, a fixed camera. Actually, it's going to be two cameras. One is establishing and somewhat follow, and the other one is a call and response for Q&A. So both of those are going to run. One cameraman's going to run the main one that does the big shot, and I'm actually going to run the one that follows the questions and answers while I'm also doing the TriCaster. So I've got typically somebody who helps me tear that stuff down. With regards to security, yeah, the scary part is, especially if your equipment is being left overnight, right? So a lot of times we'll come in the day before, set up and test to make sure that we're okay, you know, bandwidth-wise. You know, internet bandwidth is a big deal in our business, of course. And if somebody goes, oh yeah, you can do Wi-Fi. No, we can't. Oh, I can give you T1. T1's only 1.5 meg. That's not fast enough for what we want to use typically. So we do testing before and make sure everybody's happy and it looks good and the lower thirds are right. But then we got to leave our equipment there. And so this equipment's not cheap. So, you know, we require some kind of security there. And we've never had a problem with stuff being stolen from us, thank God. Whereas, you know, bands do, but partially bands get ripped off because they have their equipment in their cars, and they get stolen from their cars. They're not usually stolen from the stage, which would be the equivalent for us. But, live multi-camera broadcasts, they're a kick. And actually we've been experimenting. A few of you may have noticed this. We are now capable of taking our TriCaster signal here and broadcasting on Facebook Live. One of the things I didn't like about Facebook Live, it was a camera shot that always looked like, your cell phone cameras, and I hated that look. I hated the square look. It just didn't look professional. And it didn't have a professional vibe for folks who wanted to use it. So it was really important to me to be able to live stream from a TriCaster onto Facebook Live, and we figured that out a couple days ago. So it looks pretty cool. you know, the delay is the same before. It's about, well, it's not as bad as it used to be. It's about 10 seconds, so it's not great for interactive live chat like we're doing here, but it's not as bad as it used to be. It used to be about 30-second delay, which, so this is much more palatable. Okay, next question. Mark Owen. He writes, first, from a fellow broadcaster, I am a radio nerd. I'm a big fan of the show. I'm a big, big fan of the show. I listen on my daily crap commute in Atlanta, and Vegas is my escape. Okay, ass kissing aside, I got a question regarding a show you mentioned a few weeks back. I'm a Vegas solo tripper, but coming back in early 2017 with a group. They are not big gamblers, but I want them to see a real Vegas showman. You mentioned Frankie Moreno at the Smith Center, but also referenced another show you really enjoyed. Thank you for the info and keep it up. Cheers. Mark Owen from 92.9, the Game Midday producer, the host of the David Green College Show, and Atlanta Braves in-game host. Fucking attaboy. Yeah, it's a shame that that Frankie Moreno at the Strat's not around, because god damn it, that was such a fun show. Now, I'm trying to remember who else I said was a great Vegas performer. I will say this. I'm a big fan of Absence. That's my go-to, and that's the one I think it is, Ted. If you've got friends who are not easily offended, go see Absence, because it's hysterical. But I think I spent some time when we were talking about the marking mistakes about a guy named Clint Holmes. Clint used to have his show at Harrah's for 6 years. He had his own theater there. And I did mention that this guy is a good question, Pops. I'll answer that. This guy, Clint, is an amazing, oh, I know what the other one was, an amazing singer. I think I said he is one of the best interpreter of lyrics that I've ever seen. And so he was doing Smith Center as well. At the Cabaret Jazz, which is the smaller place, about 200 seats, great sound. But now he's got his own show over at the Venetian, or it might be the Palazzo, one of the two. And Between the Lines, that was the show that I said I didn't really understand the graphics that they used. I thought it was poorly decided upon. But I've been watching his Facebook feed. I haven't had a chance to see the show yet. But watching his Facebook feed, and it sounds like they're working together. There were some issues about maybe the energy of the show, and it sounds like they've taken steps towards that. So I'm guessing that is a place for you. I would say it depends on the kind of show you're looking for. So, you know, he's a singer. He's all about the singer. He's all about the stories of the songs. So if you're a group who would get that, that's a play. Pops wants to know, what about Gordy Brown? Gordy, that's in the live chat. Gordy Brown is an impressionist singer primarily. He's at downtown. He's at Golden Nugget. He was at Venetian for a while. I saw him at Venetian. He used to be managed by the guy who managed Siegfried and Roy. How about that, huh? So he did the Venetian, and he's back at Golden Nugget. I haven't seen him in probably 3 years. The thing about Gordy is, first of all, he's a super nice guy. Very, very friendly. His act is good depending on your age. Now, again, I haven't seen him in a couple years. He may have updated this, so I'm a little bit in the dark about this. But when I saw him at the Venetian, I liked it. The thing I liked about it, though, was, you know, most impressionists were big when I was growing up. So the 60s and 70s, right? 70s primarily. So Rich Little, for example, he's got a show on the Strip now at Trop. We had him on Talk Tales. It's our most watched show on YouTube ever. It's 260,000 views. And I loved having Rich Little on the show because he was doing the things that I remember when I was a kid. So if he does Ronald Reagan or Richard Nixon or John Wayne, well, shit, that's in my wheelhouse. That's what I want. The question is, if you're 30, do you get that? So if my kids, who are in their late 20s, would they get a Gordy Brown show. I don't think they would. But I don't really know how old you are, Mark. I'm guessing you're probably, let's guess, late 40s, just to make it easier for us. I would say, yeah, absolutely, Gordy Brown is a play. I've also mentioned Mike Hammer. Mike is a comedy magician. He's also downtown, very inexpensive. He's doing very well for himself. So he does a show which has a lot of crowd work, which is fun. And really enjoy the work he's doing. The other thing, we're kind of going off a little bit here, but you know, I also, if you like comedy, you really can't beat Carrot Top. And you know, and I know Carrot Top, for some reason, you know, he used to get a ton of shit, mostly from other comedians about being a prop comic, which I never understood that. Because if a regular comic does, let's say, 3 jokes a minute, a prop comic has to do 10 jokes a minute because you're bang, bang, bang. That seems like more work to me. And so Carrot Top is doing that. He's killing it. And he also does 15 minutes of straight stand-up, which is very good stuff. And he seems to be having a good time. So it kind of depends on what you're going for here. But, you know, from a showman perspective, you know, Clint Holmes will take you back. You know, by the way, Donkashin is out running around. Oh, I just forgot his name. Holy Christ. It's good to get old. He's doing that thing over at the Windows showroom at Bally's. And I've heard that the storytelling part of it, Wayne Newton, thank you guys, is good. He can't sing anymore, is kind of the take on him. But can you imagine listening to him telling stories about hanging out with Sinatra, you know, and Sammy Davis Jr., Dean Martin? How cool would that be? I want to see that show. I think he's been taking kind of a break, which is usually not a good sign. But I want to go see that. I think other than that, you know, I don't really know of other showmen. If you do have a chance to see Frankie, I would go see Frankie, though, because my guess is if he's at the Smith Center, he's not doing the choreographed nonsense again. But yeah, I think it's interesting. I think we're seeing a resurgence of the Vegas entertainer again, coming back, getting their own shows. It'll be interesting to see if they actually work. I'm telling you what, a lot of people right now, especially recently, since so many shows just recently closed, a lot of people in the entertainment world here are a little nervous, given the fact that, you know, businesses are closing left and right. Okay, let's take a few live chat questions, and then we'll wrap it up with a reminder of last week's Haddam, and then we'll let you guys out of here. So our first chat question comes from Jimmy, and Jimmy wants to know, is there a venue in Las Vegas known by up-and-coming arts where they might get discovered? There is. This is probably the reason why First Friday still has legs. And it's the Downtown Art District. So it's the on the corner of Main Street and Charleston. And, you know, they used to have a place, a couple art galleries in Summerlin. One of them was really cool, and they shut down. It was off of Sahara. I really liked it. But this was years and years ago, actually before the recession. So there was more of those kind of places like in Summerlin and elsewhere. Those guys didn't really survive. But the Art District in downtown, again, Maine and Charleston, is the primary place. And this location has, I'm going to guess, 20 or 30 little art galleries in one building. And there are art galleries around it as well. So that's kind of like the epicenter of the Art District. Again, Maine and Charleston, and then it kind of goes out a little bit north, somewhere, some east, a little bit south. But there's some really neat stuff there. As a matter of fact, one of Melissa's favorite paintings, which we have in our dining room, she initially discovered at First Friday at one of these art galleries in the district. really, really cool. And, you know, and it's super eclectic. You're going to get stuff that's, you look at it and go, what the fuck are these guys thinking? And you're going to get stuff that goes, what the hell? How do humans make that kind of art? It's pretty cool. I think that's one of the great powers of First Friday is First Friday is basically anchored there. And, you know, the ability to get out there with some food and some music and, you know, street vendors and then be able to go in and out of the art gallery. We haven't done that in a while. We actually haven't done it since the Zappos people took over First Friday. But when we first moved here, we felt it was like one of our great little discoveries. We probably went three or four times and enjoyed it. I've heard it's gotten, you know, better. So we got to go back. As a matter of fact, it was last week and I didn't get a chance to go, partly because I was recovering from last Tuesday's show. Okay. Alan Perry wants to know, did you finish off the Crown Royal last week? Yes. So we finished off the Crown. It was a Crown XO. It wasn't just, you know, any Crown Royal. It was a super fancy Crown XO. We finished that off. We finished off the Woodford Reserve. It was about a half a bottle of Crown, about a quarter bottle of Woodford Reserve, and some rum, some spice rum. We knocked that dude out as well. Hoo-wee! That was an interesting night. Like I said, I didn't go to bed until 5. After we were done, I kept Chris around just to kind of, you know, make sure he wasn't going to kill himself. And we just kind of bullshitted for a while. It was a crazy night. Epic. Absolutely epic. Or as Pop said, completely off the rails. So, thanks. And hey, Alan in the live chat, have you communicated with Chris before? Because he implied that he recognized your name. Now, that might have been because he was drinking the alcohol that you provided, and he knows everybody who provides him alcohol. But he implied that he actually knew who you were. So I thought that was kind of pretty cool. Okay, moving on. And thanks again to Alan for providing the Crown Royal XO. Who provided the Woodford? I think it was me. Okay. Steve wants to know, will you retire in Vegas? That is a great question. So initially when we moved here, that was not the plan. The plan, there's basically, in my belief, there's 5 states that you can retire in, and those are the states that don't have income tax. So Texas, Florida, Nevada, whoever else. Wyoming? I don't know. So our initial intent was to retire in Florida because my goal, New Hampshire, thank you, Gregor. My goal was to have a Scott Dock. I always thought it'd be cool to have a little dock out in their backyard and have a boat that you could go puttering around in lakes and streams and rivers and stuff. And as you know, Florida has a boatload of those kinds of places. So, you know, when we had our financial planner, you know, when we first did this, we had I had a Scott Dock on the cover, and I'm like, we're going to Florida. This is where it's going to be. So that was the plan. And then one September, my cousin, who has a timeshare in Cabo, said, hey, we can't use our timeshare in September. Would you like to come and check it out? I'm like, yeah, sure. I haven't been to Cabo in many years. Let's go do that. This is about 3 or 4 years ago. Excuse me. So we head on down there. Oh, but before we get on down there, Melissa has, you know, a medical emergency. We're in the hospital the night before. We get back. She's okay. We finally get down to Mexico. We get in the pool because that's my thing. I just want to float around, drink Mai Tais, and relax. And the first of all, the pool was hotter than outside, which is not a feature. And it was, I don't know, 90% humidity. It was brutal. This is September in Cabo. So we're floating around, melting in this pool, and we float by a group of 2 couples. And we're, you know, we're friendly folks. So we get to chatting, and I mentioned, now, wow, I'm surprised by how humid it is. It's pretty humid here. And, you know, all four people, the 2 couples kind of look at each other like, silly rabbit. You think this is humid? Oh, man, you should be where we live. Where's that? Florida. Huh? Yeah, yeah. This is a walk in the park compared to the humidity of Florida. Okay. Yes, hello, financial advisor. Scott. Cancel the Scott Doc. We are not moving to Florida. That's not going to happen. So as a result, I think the chances of us retiring in Vegas are 90%. Again, how can you beat it? The weather is great. Housing is amazing considering it's a 2 million person city with the best food, best entertainment in the world. The rest of the cost of living is reasonable as well. As long as you don't overextend, I think this is a pretty good place to live. And the house that we're fortunate to live in now, this is, we basically said when we bought this is the house in which I will die. Now, is there anything that might change that? Yeah, probably. But yes, there is. I don't think it's probable. But I can see other possible scenarios where we might retire elsewhere, but I seriously doubt it. I think we're going to retire here. And by the way, we're not doing anything special. There are three huge senior communities here, Sun City communities up in Aliante, down in Anthem, and over in Summerlin. And why? Because there's a shitload of people who retire in Las Vegas. It's probably the second largest to, I'm guessing, Phoenix, where is the original Sun City. So yeah, I think this is a good place to retire. I think, but I'll tell you what the ticket is, and this is the thing that always upset me about my mom. She never really did anything here. Now, she didn't really get out and do stuff. And that's the other thing about retiring, in an age-restricted community. There's a shitload of entertainment for folks who want to do that. Now, I probably wouldn't do that. We're going to be here. But they've got people entertaining, in those communities, strip people, great people. All the time. So I think from a retirement standpoint, as long as you can handle the heat, that's good. My mom moved here the same month I did, August, and she hated it. She used to live in Anacortes, Washington. So the switch in temperatures was monstrous for her. So she was not a happy camper when she first moved here. But, like everybody, you get acclimated. And when you realize, the cost of living here is so much cheaper. The house that you can buy here for the money is unbelievable. It is now still that way. Now, 10 years from now, I don't know if that's going to be the case, but now it really is pretty cool. All right. Vegas Wee wants to know, is Chris just doing Bally's? So Chris doesn't do Bally's. He had once done a show at Bally's, but here's what Chris Phillips is doing now. He does, as Zoe Bowie, he does a Downtown Graham. Those are usually every other Friday at the pool. And then he also does the Fremont Street Experience. He does that on Saturdays. And you should see, he packs that crowd there. So those are his two main Zoe Bowie stuff. He'll do a Zoe Bowie here and a Zoe Bowie there. But those are his two main gigs. Ironically, he's not doing anything for Station Casinos right now. And he used to be at Red Rock, as we talked last week. And then he also at South Point, he's doing his vintage show, which he had mentioned it was extended. I'm not sure if he said how much longer the extension is. He's doing that every other Saturday. So that's if you're down. I mean, South Point's a fucking drive down there. I don't really like getting way the hell down there. But if you are that somebody, if you want to see somebody getting back to a showman, go see Chris. He's got his head in the, man, I really, really, really want to be just like the guys who have that maverick spirit. It's pretty sweet. Let's see. Vegas Wee also wants to know Brett update. Okay, so I don't have anything specific. Brett, some people saw a picture of him on Facebook. He has lost some weight. He's still, fighting the fight. We were trying to get together for lunch so I could just find out what's going on and stay connected with them. But we just haven't been able to do it. His family's in town and they're running around Vegas and doing all that stuff. So I don't have a definitive update on Brett, but I've told him that you guys are super supportive and I'm getting emails and live chat questions every single week wishing him well. So he knows that, he appreciates that. And as soon as I get a more definitive thing from him, I will absolutely let you know. And then finally, before we wrap up the live chat questions, Mike wants to know, Why do shows say they are closing just to move to a new location? Well, I'm guessing Mike's talking about Absinthe. And so Absinthe was in a tent in the beginning in the front of Caesar's Palace. Again, one of my favorite shows. And they just announced today, as a matter of fact, that they're moving from the tent to the Cosmo in the property called Rose Rabbit Lie. Now, Rose Rabbit Lie, when it was first built, had a show done by the same guy, Spiegelworld, called Vegas Nocturnal, or Vegas Nocturne, or whatever it was. And it was kind of like an Absinthe light. And it just didn't quite work. Apparently, they're burning through $1 million for a week. Oh, no, it was this huge burn rate. And that show didn't last for, I don't know, a couple months. Matter of fact, you could go on House Seats and get a show to that every day for a while. So the thing about Absinthe, why do they do this? They never said they were closing. They never said they were closing. What they said was that they're moving. And this was clearly some negotiation play on their part. So Absinthe is owned by Spiegelworld. It's a three-way partnership at Caesars. It's Caesars, Spiegelworld, and Base Entertainment. Base Entertainment are the guys, as you might remember, who also were running the Frankie Moreno show. So Base Entertainment and Caesars were like, yeah, we absolutely want you to extend you for another couple years. But the contract required all three of them to sign that. And Spiegelworld said, we're not interested in doing that. Now, it's not real clear what the issue was there. I'm not sure that I've read what the issue was there. I don't know if it was a Base thing or a Caesars thing. So they announced today that they're going to be moving to this Rose Rabbit Lie location, which is odd because Spiegelworld sued Cosmo about some problems with ticket repayments through Ticketmaster or whatever it was. So they sued Cosmo of all things, and now they're moving in there. Here's the issue with that, in my opinion. So Absinthe is in this big tent, and part of the charm of that show is the tent. A tent is arguably the 12th man. It's a super important part, and you know, it creates a really cool kind of, well, tent-like, outdoorsy, a little off the rails environment. The Rose Rabbit Lie property, which is nice. It's a, you know, I saw that show a couple times there. It's a good property, but it doesn't have the same charm. It's not even close to the same charm. And I don't think it's probably half the number of seats. I think the tent held 500. God, I can't imagine it being that big. It felt like it was half that size for the Rose Rabbit Lie property. So A, I don't think, it doesn't have the same charm. B, it doesn't have the same height. So if you like aerial artists, those guys are probably not gonna have a job because it's just not as high as the tent was at Absinthe. So I was hoping they were just gonna move the tent somewhere else and not just put themselves in an indoor property. I think they would have been better off if they'd gone to well, they couldn't do it, but a perfect example would have been the Cirque show at Aria. So they closed that down. They closed it down for convention center space because that show just wasn't getting any money. And the story about that, by the way, is because it was on the second floor and people were having a hard time finding it. The restaurants were at the second floor at Aria, and some of those restaurants have failed. Many people in the inside say it's because it's on the second floor. You don't walk by them. You don't know they're there. And that was the same for Zakara, which was the Cirque show. So they shut that down. They're going to convert it into, like I said, convention center space. But that space was big. So you could have put a show like Absinthe, but again, part of the charm of Absinthe was being able to watch the show in the round. The entertainers were in the middle, and they were playing to all 360 degrees. The Rose Rabbit Lie is actually it's a 180. So the stage is a half a pie. Your entertainment's there, and there's a wall there, and the stage actually rotated, so entertainers would rotate into the main area, and they'd rotate out. So they've cut 180 degrees of their performance area right like that by going from a tent into Rose Rabbit Lie. So I don't really understand the thinking about that. And they're clearly going to have to retool the show as a result of that. It'll be interesting. I mean, fuck, Absence was such a good show. I think it's disappointing that they're making that change. All right. Let's do, what are we doing? Oh, we're almost an hour, even just kind of off the top of you kind of thing. All right, real quick, I'm going to remind folks on the Have a Drink on Me. I was actually very concerned that we didn't even get through that last week, but we actually did, barely. But this is a reminder for last week's Have a Drink on Me. So this is a special opportunity for our live chat guys to see what it was. And I'm going to give you guys the clue one more time. Here it is. Let me go grab my clues. That's pretty, isn't it? Okay. Okay, here it is. Our three clues for this week's, which is actually episode 276's Have a Drink on Me. First one, Bumblebees Do It, according to the song I've heard. Again, Bumblebees Do It, according to a song I've heard. Hint number two, in the Air Force, it's the smallest official capacity, which may have 12 to 100 airmen attached. I was in one of those when I was in the Air Force. It's the smallest official capacity, which may have 12 to 100 airmen attached. They also might include four planes or so. And hint number three, it's rumored you can pick this casino out from space thanks to some serious candle power. It's rumored you can pick this casino out from space thanks to some serious candle power. By the way, that's not true. You cannot see this particular casino specifically if looking at Las Vegas from space. So that is a lie. All right, guys. That's it, everybody. Thanks for playing along. Thank you so much for the live chat and everybody that I mentioned. People all over the place, even in Canada. God bless your little hearts. We're going to wrap up this bonus episode. We'll see you guys next week, next Tuesday, for a full-blown, high-octane Living in Las Vegas. God help us. We'll see you guys next week. Take care, everybody.